Developing news this evening, shockwaves from that explosive confrontation.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Donald Trump, wounded by the bombshell tape revelation, brings Bill Clinton's accusers to the debate. Tonight, a civil war has ignited in the GOP. Our new poll shows Hillary Clinton surging to a double-digit lead. Also, in his own words, what we found in the archives, what Trump has said about himself and women. Did he predict the trouble to come? Drowning in a deluge, frantic high water rescues as towns become swallowed in the hurricane's deadly aftermath. A race to save so many trapped with no way out. And off the shelves, a major move tonight from the nation's biggest cell phone carriers and a big blow to Samsung over fears of exploding phones. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. 29 days until Election Day, and our new poll numbers out tonight speak to the urgent crisis exploding inside the Republican Party from the top down. With Donald Trump's fortunes fading over his lewd comments about women, a GOP civil war has broken out at its center, party loyalty versus self-survival. The crisis underscored by a new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll taken after the controversy broke and before last night's debate. It shows Hillary Clinton now with an 11-point lead over Trump nationally among likely voters. NBC's Hallie Jackson has late details.
Tonight, abandonment and astonishment as the country's top Republican walks away from the top of his ticket. House Speaker Paul Ryan telling his colleagues on a conference call he won't defend Donald Trump anymore, won't campaign for him, essentially conceding Trump won't win. Sources on the call revealing Ryan was forced to reiterate he won't unendorse Trump after facing backlash from angry House members.
I think we came away pretty united.
How you talk about unity when the House Speaker isn't going to campaign with or defend the party's nominee?
Well, he's still endorsing him, and it's a very unusual year. And I think Paul Ryan is trying to make the best of a very difficult situation.
Ryan's making official what it appears he'd been doing all along, focusing only on saving GOP control of Congress. Even as Trump today tweeted, Ryan shouldn't waste his time on fighting the Republican nominee. Senator Richard Burr, up for re-election in North Carolina, won't, betting it's better to stick by Trump's side.
If we don't allow somebody to be forgiven, who's going to forgive us?
All of it illustrating the GOP dilemma. Go against Trump and risk the wrath of his base, or back him and hope to hang on if he loses. Now growing fears it's not just the Senate in danger, but the House too.
It's time for Republicans to hit the panic button because Trump could really drag them into the political abyss.
The Republican National Committee silent so far, but outside its headquarters, a graphic display of the GOP divide. At a small protest, a reference to Trump's 2005 comments about grabbing women's genitals. Better to grab one than be one.
Each member, each candidate is running for him or herself, and that may include embracing Donald Trump or not embracing Donald Trump.
Ryan's Republicans and Trump's, a coalition now crumbling. Our new polling shows more voters want Democrats to control Congress by the widest margin since 2013. But the Republican Party is still standing by its nominee. Late tonight, NBC News has learned, privately reassuring its members of its great relationship with Team Trump. Lester?
Hallie Jackson tonight. Hallie, thanks. And all of this follows last night's second presidential debate, which was perhaps the ugliest we've seen in modern political history. Trump unleashed some of his harshest attacks yet to his opponent's face. While today, Clinton continued to try and stay above the fray. We've got it all covered, starting with NBC's Katie Turk. Katie, good evening.
Good evening, Lester. The line to get into Trump's event here in Wilkes-Barre is thousands of people deep. Supporters willing to stand by Trump and against anybody who stands in his way. Last night's debate was largely seen as Trump's best chance to make amends with the Republican Party, but he proved he had no interest in that, staging a political stunt that some operatives believe could cost him the election.
Fueled by a fevered crowd in Pennsylvania, Donald Trump was on the attack.
Special prosecutor, here we come, right?
A day after turning the debate stage into a sideshow, putting Hillary Clinton face to face with accusers from her past.
If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, mine are words and his was action. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attack them viciously. Four of them here tonight.
The GOP nominee was going for a vicious counterpunch, backed into a corner by a 2005 audio leak.
Grab him by the...
You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk.
Have you ever done those things?
Women have respect for me, and I will tell you, no, I have not.
The candidate hitting new political lows, calling Clinton the devil, confirming he did not pay federal taxes, casting conspiracy theories, fighting with the moderators.
It's nice to one on three.
And throwing red meat to his base, threatening Clinton with jail time for her use of a private email server.
I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Generally do not have candidates for president threatening to jail or prosecute their opponents. That's the kind of thing that you might expect from a third world country.
After a cold introduction, Trump spent 90 minutes stalking the debate floor, at times hovering behind Clinton. He didn't take notes, he barely smiled, and at times he ignored the facts. On yet another hack into the Clinton campaign emails.
She doesn't know if it's the Russians doing the hacking. Maybe there is no hacking.
But a senior U.S. intelligence official tells NBC News Trump has known about the evidence of Russia's hacking since mid-August, when security officials briefed him on the direct link to Putin's government. Katie Turr, NBC News, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
This is Andrea Mitchell. Tonight, Hillary Clinton in Michigan, bolstered by a growing lead in the polls.
Did anybody see that debate last night?
And newly confident after that verbal slugfest with Donald Trump, Trump's biggest mistake, the Clinton team believes it was not giving a stronger apology for those lewd comments.
He just doubled down on his excuse that it's just locker room banter.
The debate, stunningly personal, including Clinton's decision in the opening moments not to shake Trump's hand, a choice she didn't signal to anyone beforehand. Clinton's strategy throughout the night to not be rattled by Trump.
I am reminded of what my friend Michelle Obama advised us all. When they go low, you go high.
Even with Trump hovering behind her while she answered questions.
Well, I would go back and you know, lean up against my stool, but he was very present.
In Michigan and Ohio, Clinton is trying to register students before tomorrow's deadline. But a new challenge, what may come out from thousands of hacked emails released by WikiLeaks, even today, from Clinton's campaign chairman. When Clinton was asked last night about one email summary of a paid Wall Street speech in which she confides that to get anything done in Washington, you need both a public and a private position. She explained last night she was talking about the Steven Spielberg movie about Abraham Lincoln.
President Lincoln was trying to convince some people. He used some arguments. Convincing other people, he used other arguments.
She got caught in a total lie. Now she's blaming the lie on the late, great Abraham Lincoln.
Tonight, the Clinton campaign believes they took Trump's roughest shot, and their strategy of staying above the fray worked so far, with 1 month to go. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News, Detroit, Michigan.
A lot to digest here. Let's bring in our political director, the moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. Chuck, we've never seen anything quite like the last 72 hours. The civil war now breaking wide open in the Republican Party, a flood of GOP lawmakers abandoning their nominee, 29 days till the election to save themselves. What happens now?
Well, I think what happened, I think the Republican Party was about to leave Trump en masse with the assumption that last night was going to, where he would have a meltdown on stage that would have looked like the first debate, where even supporters would be ready to throw in the towel, and it would have been, quote unquote, easy to walk away from Trump. The problem is, Trump has made it harder for these guys to walk away because he threw so much red meat at his base that there will be retribution to any Republican. Say if you're Pat Toomey, the Republican senator, is struggling in a re-election in Pennsylvania, if he wants to unendorse Trump, he needs Trump supporters, but he needs those folks that don't like Trump, too. So he is caught in this vice grip. And I think a bunch of these Republicans woke up today, stepped outside and thought like stepping outside in the eye of a hurricane, Lester, assuming that, oh, everything's okay, when they don't realize the worst may be yet to come with Trump. They may be staring at a total collapse of the party by Election Day.
All right, Chuck, thanks for your analysis. Now to the state of emergency in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Towns left underwater and residents left trapped as rivers overflow their banks. The epicenter of the danger is in North Carolina. That's where we find our national correspondent, Miguel Almaguer.
Tonight in North Carolina, this is the desperate race to save lives. The town of Lumberton drowning in a deluge. Neighbors helping neighbors.
That's what we should do, come together and help one another.
Who can't wait for rescue teams trying to reach them. 1,500 people trapped by floodwaters.
We was helping whoever needed the chance to get out.
Thank you.
And we've been doing this since 9 o'clock this morning.
North Carolina is in a state of emergency. 1,400 rescues in 24 hours. Some levees can't hold back all the water, and rivers are rising.
You don't have nothing left besides us.
Levander Clark and his fiance lost everything.
I walked through the house, and everything we owned, and it was floating.
First responders are still flooding in, pulling children and their parents to safety.
I had to walk through water, like all the way up to my stomach, go back to my kids. It was horrible.
Hurricane Matthew dumped over a foot of rain. At least 23 were killed in the U.S., nearly half of those in North Carolina. After plowing through Haiti, where Matthew killed hundreds, there's now fear of a cholera outbreak. The U.N. says over a million there need help. Shredding the coast of Florida, knocking out power across much of Georgia, in the Carolinas, Matthew's wrath left roads swamped and buried in debris. The Moore family home hit with 5 feet of water. Amber, an Iraq veteran, losing her Purple Heart in the flood.
We never thought it would be this bad. Never thought. And I don't think anyone else did either.
With the damage estimated at up to $6 billion, tonight in communities like Lumberton, the water continues to rise. The storm gone, but its wrath still being felt.
With water rescues still unfolding at this very hour, we are told some rivers could crest 17 feet above flood stage. Meantime, the president has declared a disaster in multiple states, and over in Florida, a federal judge even extended voter registration because of this slow-motion ongoing crisis. Lester.
All right, Miguel Almaguer in North Carolina tonight. Thank you. In California, a man accused of killing two Palm Springs police officers is expected to be formally charged in court tomorrow. John Felix was arrested over the weekend for the shooting deaths of officers Jose Gilbert Vega and Leslie Zerebny. In the community, a huge outpouring of emotion for these fallen officers. Officer Zerebny was only 27 and recently gave birth to a daughter. Officer Vega was 63 and due to retire in December. Still ahead tonight, more bad news if you own one of those Samsung phones recalled over risk of bursting into flames. Why even the replacement phones are not considered safe. There is major news tonight concerning those new Samsung Galaxy Note 7 phones that have been involved in a string of fires and smoke incidents over the past week. Tonight, the Consumer Product Safety Commission and Samsung say customers should stop using the replacement phones. This announcement late today as federal investigators are looking into whether these replacement phones may pose the same risk as the originals, which were blamed on more than 100 fires. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
Tonight, Samsung's problems have gone from bad to worse. AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon all telling us they've stopped selling or offering the new replacement Galaxy Note 7. After a string of new fires involving the very phone meant to replace the model that was recalled last month for catching fire. In Minnesota, 13-year-old Abby Zuas says her replacement Note 7 caught fire on Friday while she was at school, burning her thumb.
It felt like a pins and needles, except a lot more intense. It burnt like you were getting burned from like hot metal or something.
The owner of this phone in Houston tells us it caught fire in a restaurant. And last week in Louisville, a Southwest Airlines plane was evacuated after Brian Green's phone caught fire.
I kind of looked around to see what was going on, and I had smoke just billowing out of my clothes and out of my pocket.
Tonight, Samsung says it is suspending all sales of the Galaxy Note 7. And even though there are a limited number of reports, we want to reassure customers that we are taking every report seriously. Consumer Reports says it is very unusual for a replacement model to have the same defect as the original model.
So Consumer Reports thinks that you should take advantage of the fact that the carriers are willing to replace these phones with different phones or refund your money. Just take the phone in and stop using it.
Tonight, Samsung and the Consumer Product Safety Commission say customers should stop using the Note 7, turn it off, and return it for an exchange or a refund. Meanwhile, both the CPSC and Consumer Reports say they're not aware of any other phone makes or models involved in a pattern of spontaneous fires. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We are back in a moment with Trump's troubles with women. Did he predict his own campaign turmoil decades ago? Back now with more on our top story and a closer look at Donald Trump in his own words. In the wake of that bombshell recording of Trump making lewd comments about women, we went back into the archives and found that Trump may have been foreshadowing for many years what threatens to be his undoing as a presidential candidate. Our senior investigative correspondent, Cynthia McFadden, explains.
For decades, Donald Trump has flaunted his life with beautiful women.
For an older person, he's very attractive.
In fact, he himself predicted his history with women could be a problem if he ran for office. Chris Matthews asked him about it in 1998.
Can you imagine how controversial I'd be? You think about him with the women. How about me with the women? Can you imagine?
Well, you might be close to the him Trump is referring to is Bill Clinton. Although last night he made a point of saying his own bad behavior paled against Clinton's.
If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, mine are words, and his was action.
Clearly, Donald Trump has recognized for decades that his comments to women are inappropriate and wrong. It's a lot more self-awareness in the past than he's showing in the present. And I think it's telling that he thinks that he can get away with these comments about women. And right now, women voters aren't letting him get away with it.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just... I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Back in 1992, it happened to Faith Daniels, then an anchor and talk show host at NBC. She told us today she expected a kiss on the cheek.
I saw you at the celebrity chef dinner here in New York.
And what a kiss.
You kissed me on the lips in front of the paparazzi, and I said, that'll cost you. I'm booking you on the show.
I know, that's right.
Daniels asked Trump whether he would ever consider running for president.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I'm so controversial. I love beautiful women. I love going out with beautiful women, and I love women in general. And people would say, oh, that's a horrible thing. You know, somebody would say, what would they say if you said you love women? I'd say, I agree.
But as of now, Trump's version of loving women doesn't seem so lovely to a majority of female voters. His own prophecy, perhaps, coming true. Cynthia McFadden, NBC News, New York.
When we come back, why a husband's heartfelt letter is striking such a chord across the nation. Finally tonight, the letter that is moving millions all across the country. It's a love letter of sorts, written by a husband with a touching expression of gratitude toward those who don't often hear the words, thank you. Here's Kristen Dahlgren.
Here we are.
When 34-year-old Laura Levis died from a massive asthma attack, husband Peter DeMarco could have easily melted into grief. What he did instead is inspiring. A simple act, a thank you letter, sent to the doctors, nurses, even the cleaning staff, everyone who helped care for his wife. So extraordinary, it was published in the New York Times. He writes, how many times did you hug me and console me when I fell to pieces, or ask about Laura's life and the person she was? Amanda Moores was their social worker.
Despite such tragedy, I think that there was a lot of beauty in that room.
Like the time hospital staff looked the other way when Peter smuggled in their beloved cat for one final lick.
It's not just about the physical support you give, it's about that emotional support.
Or when nurse Jennifer Polly's helped Peter climb into his wife's bed to spend one last hour at her side. He called it a gift beyond gifts. But what he's now given them is a public expression of his appreciation. So powerful, it hangs in the intensive care unit at CHA Cambridge Hospital.
I think we all needed to be able to walk by it and look at Laura's picture and remember, even in the difficult moments, that this is why we do what we do.
The sentiment struck a nerve online. Stories like this make me remember why I practice intensive care medicine. Sometimes you need a letter to restore your faith in humanity. Gratitude from a grieving husband, now teaching the power of saying thank you. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
And that will do it for us on a Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.